The 1984 Ad. In the spring of 1983, when Jobs had begun to plan for the Macintosh launch, he asked for a commercial that was as revolutionary and astonishing as the product they had created. "I want something that will stop people in their tracks," he said. "I want a thunderclap." The task fell to the Chiat Day Advertising Agency, which had acquired the Apple account when it bought the advertising side of Regis McKenna's business. The person put in charge was a lanky beach bum with a bushy beard, wild hair, goofy grin, and twinkling eyes named Lee Clow, who was the creative director of the agency's office in the Venice Beach section of Los Angeles. Clow was savvy and fun, in a laid-back yet focused way, and he forged a bond with Jobs that would last 3 decades. Clow and 2 of his team, the copywriter Steve Hayden and the art director Brent Thomas, had been toying with a tagline that played off the George Orwell novel, "Why 1984 won't be like 1984. Jobs loved it and asked them to develop it for the Macintosh launch. So they put together a storyboard for a 60-second ad that would look like a scene from a sci-fi movie. It featured a rebellious young woman outrunning the Orwellian thought police and throwing a sledgehammer into a screen showing a mind-controlling speech by Big Brother. The concept captured the zeitgeist of the personal computer revolution. Many young people, especially those in the counterculture, had viewed computers as instruments that could be used by Orwellian governments and giant corporations to sap individuality. But by the end of the 1970s, they were also being seen as potential tools for personal empowerment. The ad cast Macintosh as a warrior for the latter cause, a cool, rebellious, and heroic company that was the only thing standing in the way of the big evil corporation's plan for world domination and total mind control. Jobs liked that. Indeed, the concept for the ad had a special resonance for him. He fancied himself a rebel, and he liked to associate himself with the values of the ragtag band of hackers and pirates he recruited for the Macintosh group. Even though he had left the Apple commune in Oregon to start the Apple Corporation, he still wanted to be viewed as a denizen of the counterculture rather than the corporate culture. But he also realized deep inside that he had increasingly abandoned the hacker spirit. Some might even accuse him of selling out. When Wozniak held true to the homebrew ethic by sharing his design for the Apple I for free, it was Jobs who insisted that they sell the boards instead. He was also the one who, despite Wozniak's reluctance, wanted to turn Apple into a corporation and not freely distribute stock options to the friends who had been in the garage with them. Now he was about to launch the Macintosh, a machine that violated many of the principles of the hacker's code. It was overpriced. It would have no slots, which meant that hobbyists could not plug in their own expansion cards or jack into the motherboard to add their own new functions, and it took special tools just to open the plastic case. It was a closed and controlled system, like something designed by Big Brother rather than by a hacker. So the 1984 ad was a way of reaffirming to himself and to the world his desired self-image. The heroine, with a drawing of a Macintosh emblazoned on her pure white tank top, was a renegade out to foil the establishment. By hiring Ridley Scott, fresh off the success of Blade Runner, as the director, Jobs could attach himself and Apple to the cyberpunk ethos of the time. With the ad, Apple could identify itself with the rebels and hackers who thought differently, and Jobs could reclaim his right to identify with them as well. Scully was initially skeptical when he saw the storyboards, but Jobs insisted that they needed something revolutionary. He was able to get an unprecedented budget of $750,000 just to film the ad, which they planned to premiere during the Super Bowl. Ridley Scott made it in London, using dozens of real skinheads among the enthralled masses listening to Big Brother on the screen. A female discus thrower was chosen to play the heroine, using a cold industrial setting dominated by metallic gray hues. Scott evoked the dystopian aura of Blade Runner. Just at the moment when Big Brother announces, "We shall prevail," the heroine's hammer smashes the screen and it vaporizes in a flash of light and smoke. When Jobs previewed the ad to the Apple sales force at the meeting in Hawaii, they were thrilled, so he screened it for the board at its December 1983 meeting. When the lights came back on in the boardroom, everyone was mute. Philip Schlein, the CEO of Macy's California, had his head on the table. Mike Markola stared silently. At first it seemed he was overwhelmed by the power of the ad. Then he spoke, "Who wants to move to find a new agency?" Scully recalled, most of them thought it was the worst commercial they had ever seen. Scully himself got cold feet. He asked Shiat Day to sell off the two commercial spots, one 60 seconds, the other 30, that they had purchased. Jobs was beside himself. One evening, Wozniak, who had been floating in and out of Apple for the previous 2 years, wandered into the Macintosh building. Jobs grabbed him and said, "Come over here and look at this." He pulled out a VCR and played the ad. "I was astounded," Woz recalled. "I thought it was the most incredible thing." When Jobs said the board had decided not to run it during the Super Bowl, Wozniak asked what the cost of the time slot was. Jobs told him $800,000. With his usual impulsive goodness, Wozniak immediately offered, "Well, I'll pay half if you will." He ended up not needing to. The agency was able to sell off the 30-second time slot, but in an act of passive defiance, it didn't sell the longer one. "We told them that we couldn't sell the 60-second slot, though in truth, we didn't try," recalled Lee Clow. Scully, perhaps to avoid a showdown with either the board or Jobs, decided to let Bill Campbell, the head of marketing, figure out what to do. Campbell, a former football coach, decided to throw the long bomb. "I think we ought to go for it," he told his team. Early in the third quarter of Super Bowl XVIII, the dominant Raiders scored a touchdown against the Redskins, and instead of an instant replay, television screens across the nation went black for an ominous 2 full seconds. Then an eerie black-and-white image of drones marching to spooky music began to fill the screen. More than 96 million people watched an ad that was unlike any they'd seen before. At its end, as the drones watched in horror the vaporizing of Big Brother, an announcer calmly intoned, "On January 24th, Apple Computer will introduce Macintosh, and you'll see why 1984 won't be like 1984. It was a sensation. That evening, all three networks and 50 local stations aired news stories about the ad, giving it a viral life unprecedented in the pre-YouTube era. It would eventually be selected by both TV Guide and Advertising Age as the greatest commercial of all time.